Baby, it's another episode of Playing Dress Up, the podcast where we truly unravel how people get into the con scene and talk about how they continue to navigate it. Now, our next guest has been a true veteran within the scene. She has been cosplaying since 2003. That is 17 years, baby, soon to be 18, because we're going to be in a new year. She's had a lot of successes and failures within those years, but has truly learned and moved forward to be a better version of herself from yesteryear and even yesterday. I've gotten to know her through the Sailor Moon Cafe held in New York City, where they were Sailor Mercury, and I hope you've known them through their wonderful Perona cosplay from One Piece. Also, throughout the pandemic, they've been making lovely face masks on Etsy. The Steins Gate fanatic, the DMC trash, Digimon lover, and so much more. It's the teal mermaid herself. It's Amanda of Blue Circles.
Thank you so much. That was a delightful introduction and a very, very insanely accurate portrayal of who I am as a person.
I was like, I think my favorite thing about you is that I was going through like this whole phase of anime where I wanted to watch like everything that was like very avant-garde, like things that were like not insanely popular. It's not like your One Pieces. It was like your Serial Experiments Lane and like Ergo Proxy. And like kind of like one of the animes that like hilariously fell into that list is like Steins Gate. And everybody's like, it's not avant-garde per se, but it's just the way that it's set up. It's just confusing. It's not like how everybody's going to get into it easily, because it involves like time travel and just like a lot of bullshit. And I was just like, okay, I'll take a hit. And you are probably one of the first people that I've met that was just like, bitch, I love this shit. This shit is up my alley.
It's so good. So my issue is that I feel like, so if you go back and you look at, like, the anime that was also out at the same time that the Steins Gate anime released, that was also the season that, like, Madoka came out, which was why everyone was super focused on Madoka, understandably, which was another time travel anime series, but it had, like, a lot more going on for in terms of, like, mass appeal, you know? More of, like, what people are kind of looking for, magical girl series, and, you know, it's all cutesy and it's different. But also Steins Gate was happening at the same time, which was just like, well, I guess that's also going on, but I think it's something I always advocate for. I love that show so much. I love the visual novels so much. It's like, if you're not into watching the anime, if you want to just sit and like click through a game, it's pretty much on every platform too, like Steam, if you still got a Vita. But yeah, it's so good. It's so, so good. I love that series so much.
Because I remember when I was casually watching it, and, like, that was my first mistake was just, like, because it was, I thought it was an anime that you could just watch, not really pay attention, and understand what is happening.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
And I was, like, because I remember watching the first episode, I was, like, what's up with the banana? Why is it green? And then I, like, turned around, and I was, like, what happened? Why are there three plot points that I have, like, suddenly cannot connect the dots to? And then I did a second run rewatching, and I was, like, everything makes so much more sense now.
Yeah, you do have to pay attention. I mean, it's funny because I think that's also what's interesting to me about it is, like, at the start, it sort of bills itself as this, like, oh, the slice of life. Look at all these wacky teenagers just doing their silly experiments. And then suddenly, boom, it gets real so fast. And you're like, oh, no. Oh, no.
And I think I like animes that kind of, like, do that in a sense, but like the thing about Steins Gate is that it's because like it's so non-linear that you just really have to like put the puzzle together like in your head and keep track of like what is happening. But I do like animes that be like pretty much at some point everything kind of slowly starts to make sense. Like I think that's why I like really fell in love with like Ergo Proxy, because Ergo Proxy is like an anime that you're just like, what the fuck is happening? Like, what? I don't understand. This woman has lovely blue eyeshadow, but what is going on? And it doesn't hit until, like, I swear to God, I think it's, like, the last three episodes of the anime that you understand what, like, lovely art journey you've been going on. And you're like, there was a plot and it was intentional and I had no idea. Like, those are the types of animes that, like, I like because it's not just kind of, like, a mindless watch. Like, there's anime for the mass appeal and then it's, like, others where it's like thought provoking, and then one is just like, this is just straight visuals. And I think I like Steins Gate specifically because it's in that like thought provoking genre of anime, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. I mean, that's why I always like, I'll just like be walking down the street and I'll think about like a plot point and I'm just like, ugh, and I'm like wounded all over again because I'm thinking too hard about like stuff that went down in it. And I'm just like, it's been years. Why am I not over this?
I mean, listen, when an anime hits right, an anime hits right. And that is...
Oh, God, yeah.
It's my favorite. I think that's, like, why anime is so good half the time. Because I always say it's, like, this, like, Disney-like quality where it's just, like, it's meant for kids because it's animation. And that's how we're taught to, like, think about it. But also, there are such heavy themes that come along with that animation. And the lovely thing about anime is that it's not just, like, in America where they're just, like, everything's this. It's just animation. That's your category. You like it? It's drawn. And then where, like, when you get into anime, it is a lot more specifically broken out where you have your shonens, your shoujo, your joseis, and they all each have their kind of, like, direct implications. So it's just like, is this for an older audience? Is this for a younger audience? Is this strictly for the female eye? Which I think is, like, such a hyper-specific view, but it when it hits, and I find all the animes through the josei category. I love that.
I mean, there's a reason, too, why everything, you know, is sort of blocked in a way that it is in Japan, where, like, you have, like, your early morning kids cartoons, and then you have the stuff that only airs at night in Japan because it does deal with more serious themes, and it's just like any other programming where, like, all your serious, your CSIs and your SVUs and stuff, those are all, like, your CBS nighttime shows, and then you have, like, One Piece airs in, like, you know, a kid-friendly time slot so everyone can watch it.
Oh, yes, because I'll tell you a fun story. So that really threw me off. So one, I was like, Japan can't be all about like anime at like all hours. But hilariously, if you find the right channels, yes, it does exist. Like you can find anime on any channel. Yeah. And I remember one of our friends were like, we're going to a car meet because we came to Japan. Car meets are huge in Japan if you find the right people. And they were like, it was this whole process. It felt like you had to do like some undercover FBI bullshit just to go to this car meet. And I was like, I want no part of this. I hope you guys have a great time. So me and my one friend stayed back at the Airbnb and we're just like, we don't care about the cars. We're just going to drink and we're going to have fun and we're going to chill out on our last day here. And we're flipping through the channels. And I think this is like 11 p.m. ish. And I'm like, huh, this anime is interesting. Let's just watch it. We no subtitles because it's Japan. Don't even know Japanese. We don't know a lick of what's going on. So we're casually watching it. And then all of a sudden, they started fucking. And I was like, wait a minute, what's going on? And then we realized we're watching a yaoi, and we're just like, what?
Oh my God.
And we're like, they air this in public? And they're like, wait, it's 11 p.m. It kind of makes sense. And it wasn't explicit, but it was like the implied, they're messing around on the bed, the night passes, and they wake up in the morning. But we were like,
okay,
whoa, Japan, y'all just casually air this.
Just part and parcel, I guess.
Oh, fully. But it's truly that animation is for everyone. And my favorite part, I was like, which we were talking about before we even got on, is that you became the biggest advocate for Devil May Cry, and it's still,
oh my God,
it's still my favorite thing. And I will recap it for everybody who's listening now, because I was saying, like, one day I was just watching Amanda on Twitter. I was like, all right, I'm getting to the first Devil May Cry, and I was like, ah, this is a very nice journey, I hope they enjoy it. And then literally like 2 to 3 weeks later, so I'm on Devil May Cry 5 now and having a great time. I was like, how did you do that? Just steamrolling through the games. But we talked about, they are notoriously short games, just like Bayonetta. It's like a quick story, but the action, baby, the action is where it's at.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what drew me into, was it was such a good combination of like fun gameplay and a well-balanced story and interesting characters that it just sucked me in. But it's like, I knew that this series had existed for like almost 20 years and I'd always heard about it, and then when they were airing all the trailers for DMC5, I was like, yo, this game looks tight, like I gotta check it out. And I was like, all right, let me start from the beginning and work my way through. be legit about it. And yeah, I started with one and I worked my way all through five, but I did it in like I think it was like 6 or 7 weeks that I played all five of the main games plus that reboot game, and just like fully went 0 to like 300 on that series. Like, there was just like no break, there was no taking any sort of like downtime. I just like would go to work, come home, be like, work sucked, it's time to play Devil May Cry, and just like get my aggression out, which is great because it's a hack and slash game, so you're just going ham on like a whole bunch of enemies and you're just like, oh, this feels so good.
And it's like, I know that rush because I was like, Hideki Kamiya, who was at the helm for much of the Devil May Cry series, also did Bayonetta. And so,
right.
So they both play like hilariously similar. And I think like Hideki Kamiya gets it right because it's like, even though these games are so short, they are so impactful in that 20-hour experience right. that you have. That I have at many times been like, I don't care about the next fucking AAA studio game that comes out. I'm just going to replay Bayonetta again.
I have to admit, I have not gotten around to Bayonetta yet, but I want to. Because obviously everyone's like, Amanda, you like Devil May Cry. And I'm like, yes, I know. It's Bayonetta is just Devil May Cry evolved because it's Kamiya again. Yes. You know, like, I've seen screenshots from it. I've seen gameplay. I'm just like, yeah, this is... Kamiya taking what he worked on Devil May Cry and being like, but what if I did it with a hot lady whose hair was like her clothing?
Honestly. And it's just chef's kiss. And like my favorite thing about it is that, like, I don't know, I guess like traditional weeb culture is like, go straight to the audio options, change it to Japanese, put the English subtitles and be like, this is the true version. But hilariously for Bayonetta, don't. Like, Bayonetta is actually fully meant to be played in English, and it's just the sass of just an English accent as Bayonetta talks is just the true cherry on top of everything that happens in that game.
Oh yeah, she's delightful. I mean, I enjoy when Japan sort of makes English like their canon version of things. Like, that's always really delightful to me, because like it was like that with Devil May Cry. Like, they didn't have a dub for that game in Japanese until 4 was like when they started being like, oh, we should probably do dual audio for our own audience. So up until then, it was like the English voices were the voices for the characters. It's like even like with stuff with like Kingdom Hearts, obviously because Disney's originated in the US, for Japan They're like, no, we gotta play the Kingdom Hearts, we gotta play the US dub. Like, Japanese voices aren't the true voices. They're not the real Disney characters. So it's always fun when Japan's like, no, you guys are the right language.
See, I didn't even think about that because I've always, like you're mentioning, like Devil May Cry, I've only known as like an English dub, like straight up. Like, I never knew there was even an option for Japanese voices because I was so conditioned to think, like, I'm like, huh. It's always been English. I was like, every game. I was like, I don't even think twice about putting it in Japanese.
I don't know if the options in the English right. releases of the game, but I know right. in Japan, like, eventually they were like, in 4, they finally decided to put Japanese voices in.
That is funny. I mean, I absolutely love it because it adds, I always like it mostly because it adds, be like, we're not just all about Japan. There's like an international aspect of it, and we're like deriving certain things from certain, I guess not even, I wouldn't say cultures, but I would say regional aspects of certain of the world, like Bayonetta. It's like, even though it's not even hinted or even said explicitly, like, she's English. Like, it's like, maybe she's around that area, just very generically. And I always feel, I don't even know if Devil May Cry, when I think of Devil May Cry, I think about just America. And I might be entirely wrong. I have barely played the game.
No, I mean, it's very, like, ambiguous setting, but, like, in 5, there are a lot of, like, very clearly, like, UK and London-inspired architecture and backgrounds, and, like, you use a red, you know, telephone booth to contact Nico to get her with the van over, so it's, like, very, you know, the influence is more there, but they don't ever say it because it wants to be, you know, still, like, magical fantasy world that's somewhat like our own, but we're not gonna ruin the fun by saying it's this.
I know, and I mean, hey, it works for me because I get sucked into every game like a sucker, and I believe that this country exists.
Yeah. I want to think that Dante's out there somewhere.
I hope so. With the moves that he has, he better be out there. He better be.
Fingers crossed.
And I mean, I still, that is part of just like my journey with my backlog, because I was like, I don't even know what I'm doing right now. What am I doing? Ghost of Tsushima? Because everybody was like, play Ooh, this game. It is yes, lovely. And I fully now understand, because I remember when everybody was losing their shit about Ghost of Tsushima, and here I am joining it like 5 to 6 months later, and I'm like, this game is pretty. Like, this game is stupidly well done. And so once I get through that, it is just straight Devil May Cry 1 through 5. I'm just killing it.
I mean, but enjoy your time with Ghost of Tsushima, because it is a bit... One of my friends recently described it as being like visual poetry, and it's a really simple explanation, but I still think it's very applicable, because it's, you know, there's no big HUD ruining your scene of what's going on, and the wind guides you, so there's never anything like, here, go to this area, go to this area. It sort of feels more freeform, even though you still have a direction to follow, and it feels more organic that way, and it's just, it's beautiful. It's so beautiful.
It's insane, because I was like, I love that mechanic where it was like, there's no like marker in the distance that says, oh, you are like 500 meters away, you better get to step in, and you're just like, oh, I guess we go. And it's like, no, like, you swipe up on your trackpad and the wind will tell you the direction that you're supposed to go, and it's like, just keep going, you'll get there. And I was like, the first time I saw that, I was like, this is so fucking smart. Like, this is stupidly smart. I was like, it's so effortless. And like, even if you don't swipe up on the trackpad, the wind will casually remind you and be like, it's this direction, like a gentle ease. And I was like, y'all really, you guys did something with this game. this is insanity to me.
Yeah, I remember when that got announced, everyone was not sure if it was going to do so well, because it came out so quick on the heels of like Sekiro, which was another like open world Japanese inspired, you know, sort of game. But they're two distinctly different types of games, very distinct different feels. I remember always having to explain to like my old customers when they would be like, isn't it just Sekiro? And I'm like, no, it's not Sekiro. Like, the Sekiro is good and Ghost of Tsushima is good, and they are two different experiences. Like, if you want to have a bad time and challenge yourself, go play Sekiro. But if you want to have like a chill walk through Japan where you're, you know, a old school Edo samurai, like, then go play Ghost of Tsushima.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And like, that's the fun part, is that like, you can just explore the open world, or you can kick some Mongol butt. You have the right options. Or you can sit down and watch this man with his little GameStop booty just hop into the hot spring. And that's my favorite part. That is my favorite part of the game. Because I was like, ah, that's the little booty. And then he goes, sits in, and he's like, what should I think about? Food? And I was like, yes. Yes.
I too like to get into the tub in like a warm environment and just think about food and good things to drink.
Honestly, me every time. I was like, I should be taking baths more often, especially in this.
Right?
In this day and age, I was like, here I am, be like, let's save the planet. Let's go take showers. And I'm just like, no, the planet does not need saving. Nobody's driving out in the cars, the streets anymore. Nobody's going nowhere. I think we can afford just a few more gallons of water to caress my body.
Yeah, we've saved enough time by not wasting it otherwise. I can take a nice little bubble bath for myself now and again.
Honestly, I was like, I have missed that. So I literally have not been, I have not taken a bath since I was a child. This is insane for me to go through this realization now, but this is true.
I did a bath bomb like a couple weeks ago, and it was just like the most relaxing thing. I was just like, I'm so zen. I threw some like video game remix music on, but like chill Silent Hill remix, because I'm just like, I want to feel like I'm in a completely different world right now. And it was just like, yeah, this is my poetry haiku moment. This is, you know, I'm gonna compose my poem in Ghost of Tsushima and just be like, we're complete.
See, that's on my checklist. New year, new me, new bathtub, new experiences, and just really zen out, because baby boy, do I need it. But Amanda, we're also gonna need a break. back. And I'm still very surprised that I have really not taken a bubble bath since I was a child. But besides that point and our love for just anything under the Kamiya just umbrella of games, what we really must know, Miss Amanda, is how did you get into cosplay and conventions? Because you are probably one of the guests who has the longest tenure within the scene out of everybody I've had so far.
Yeah, I was thinking about that when you invited me. I was like, I've been cosplaying for 17 years. And I was like, wait, 17 years is officially half of my life now. What? Yeah, I'm like, I'm 34, 17. Oh no. And I felt part of my bones like crumble to dust. Aw. Man, so I got into cosplay just again by being interested in anime, and like before I knew what cosplay was, I was interested in cosplaying. I remember before I even heard the word cosplay, before I knew conventions were even a thing, I watched Pokemon and was like, I want to be Misty that year, like for Halloween or whatever. But I was like going so hard about it. I was like, no, I have to find like the right items and the right things. And I'm like, what am I, like 15 at this point in time probably? And I was just like going so hard for no reason. But that was very telling of like how the rest of my cosplay career would go, because I just, now I'm still like that where I'm like, no, this doesn't look accurate. I had friends who had gone to a con when I was 16 that I didn't get to go to. And that's when I was like, oh, these are a thing you can do. Like there are these venues that exist. And 16, so I was like, oh my God, like 2000. So cons had been a thing for a while at that point, but they were still not, I would say not, they were just like starting to really be popular. And there weren't as many too, even at that point, before it like really boomed, I want to say, in even just the next couple of years. And I made my first costume for the next year was, gosh, what was that? It was like, Not Big Apple Anime Fest, but it was like anime. Maybe it was. I think it was Big Apple Anime Fest in 2003. I made my costume by hand because I didn't have a sewing machine. I'm surprised my mother let me walk out of the house because it was Thief Riku from Final Fantasy X-2, and she wears like very little clothing. And here's my 17-year-old dumbass traveling into the city on public transit in my costume because I don't know better. And God bless my mother that she has always supported me and somehow didn't just put a stop to it that exact moment. But it was so much fun because you interacted with all these other people who are also cosplaying from the thing that you were cosplaying from, and seeing other people's like crazy, crazy costumes and, you know, all the skill levels that I saw there is like what really made me aspire to like want to get better. Cause I was just like, if I made this and these people are making that, I'm like, I could do that too. And there's so many other things I want to explore. And I think the next year, like I invested in a sewing machine. Like I had asked one for like birthday or Christmas or something like that. And I just taught myself how to sew and just kept making and going to cons when I could and just getting into that scene.
That's lovely. That is just a journey. And it's mostly because I was like, I always love to hear when some people are just straight up like, I hand sewed my first thing. Like, I fully hand sewed. I had nothing. And I'm just like, that is just dedication, commitment. Because I'd be like, after me sewing a button, you know how much effort that is? And I'm just like, it's got to be really secure. How many loops was it go through? And I'm like, you have to stitch a garment together? This is a lot.
I did so much for that costume, too. Like, I learned how to style a wig. I learned how to dye fabric. I learned how to make boot covers. I learned how to make working utility pockets. Like, I took so much on for that first costume. And I think that's always how I've approached cosplay, is I always like to do a costume that even, you know, I pick out stuff that I like to do, characters I like, series I like. But it's always an added bonus if that costume is also gonna be like, okay, try doing this new thing for the first time. If I can try a new technique or learn a new skill on a new costume, that's always like an additional bit of fun for me too, because I feel like I've leveled up a little bit each time.
Oh, fully. I was like, that's like also like the fun part of cosplay, because like before we even like recorded, we were like, we all cosplayers, I always feel like they're jack of all trades, master of none, because you really do pick up all of these little techniques, like, slowly over time. And, like, sometimes you do your first big project and it is, you're just throwing everything at it. Like, and it's insane. And you're like, I'm gonna mess up so much, but eventually I will get it right. Like, I remember when I styled my first wig and I thought I knew what teasing was. And then now it's like, me fast forward now, it's like, no, I don't know what I was doing. I was just matting hair to matte hair. And now it's like, I'm like, you go at it and you brush back and all of this good stuff. But it's always interesting to see like how many techniques that I feel in my head feel commonplace. And then when I explain it to people, like, Joe, nobody was thinking about that. Nobody knows how to do that here. Like, what? And it's like, I didn't even know. Like, it's just interesting to see how much knowledge you can amass over the years more than anything else.
Right. And I think that's what's fun sharing with other people too, and having like a circle of friends that also cosplay, because then you learn through your friends doing stuff too. So like, you'll learn something from someone working on a costume, and then you'll teach someone something by just posting a progress photo and being like, oh yeah, da 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 da. And they're like, how did you do that? And you're like, oh, well, you just cut it from the backside, obviously. And they're like, what? And I'm like, oh, I mean, not obviously. I mean, here, let me help you. And like, you know, you share that knowledge, and you help others become better, and you become better, and everyone's costumes look better for it, and you all can just like go out looking fabulous together.
That's it. And that is truly my favorite part about cosplay, is truly just looking fabulous. Whether yeah. it's by myself, a group of friends, just strolling down the con hallway, it's probably honestly half the reason that I do it, honestly.
No, but like when you walk onto the con floor and you're fully in your costume for the first time, and you step outside that elevator and you're there, it really is like a little rush, because you feel so proud of yourself. You're like, here it is, here's what I've been working on the past weeks, months, whatever, all together, and you're out there. And of course, it's always like super gratifying when that first person walks up and is like, hey, great costume, or they're like, hey, can I get a photo? And it's just like, it feels like every bit of blood and sweat and tears and like lack of sleep, like in that one moment, just satisfies you. And you're just like, I mean, it's for yourself too, but of course it's always nice when like people can like see you walk out and they're just like, yeah, you look rad, or like, you worked really hard on that, good job. Or even your friends who are like, it's so nice to see the costume in person after seeing all your progress photos online. Like, you want to support each other, and it's nice to be supported too.
Yeah. And it's also because I always feel that, just like, I feel like comes with the caveat of being an artist, caveat of like looking at your own work, you're so judgmental of like what you're putting out. And
oh,
so
god, yeah.
So like for me, like what I usually like, I'm making a costume and I am sewing it, and I'm just like, this is shit. This is garbage. Garbage. And I'm just like, I'm just trudging through it at this point. And in my head, I'm like, well, you got the garment done and I have no idea how it looks upon me. Fast forward to the actual convention, and now I finally put everything together, and I'm just like, okay, I'm feeling a little bit better because I'm seeing all the pieces come together, you know, whether that is just the base outfit with my makeup, with the wig on top, but I'm not fully 100% sold, and I'm like, is this what I want to present to the public? Are they going to like it? But, and so it's all this anxiety. Like, I would always say it's from me leaving my hotel room up until I get to the elevator doors. Like, it's like the reverse walk of shame, like walking down the hallway yeah. and nobody's there. And then when you see that first person through the elevator doors, like, oh my god, I love your cosplay. And I'm like, stop it. Oh, you like it? Oh, thank you. That, okay, you guys do like this. All right, I'm gonna have a great time now.
Yeah, it's a good confidence boost. I think, you know, you can hype yourself up, and there's like a, like, it's like you're capped, you know, there's a certain level that you can get up to hyping yourself, but even just having one person like hype you unlocks that, and like, it just, you know, you get that extra little boost of confidence, and it's nice.
Oh, and I like love it, because it's like, it's just because I'm so critical. Like, one of the biggest things that I'm always critical about is, like, my makeup. Because I'm always, like, sometimes it feels like I don't know what I'm doing. Let me tell you, putting on makeup in this fucking quarantine, I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing anymore. Oh, my God. I straight up tried to contour the other day, and I was like, what is going on? Where's my cheekbones? Where's the muscle memory?
Right. You've created this, like, swirling masterpiece like Starry Night on your face because you're just like, I don't know what makeup is anymore. I don't know where this is supposed to go.
I was like going through it. I was like, this was my foundation? This isn't even my color. Like, hot mess, like fully forgetting the process in my head where it's like, Joe, past you built out this routine because the end product does match your skin tone with the contour and the concealer and everything, but you have to trust the process. And I was just like, what is this? This is so dark. Like, insanity. But like when I do like cosplay, and I try to kind of like make sure the makeup isn't too harsh, because I feel like that's one of the first things I had to learn about cosplay is like, makeup is gonna have to be harsh. Shut up. Don't paint for like every day if it's you're gonna be photographed for like photo shoots and all of this. It's you're gonna have a brown streak, and that's okay, because when the photographer takes it, they'll be like, huh, I didn't even see your makeup if you blended like halfway to hell. It's cute if it's in person, but like for a photo shoot, they're like, baby, you were wearing makeup. Swear. I saw the eyeshadow, but I didn't see no contour.
It really is like, there's a difference between cosplay makeup and just like everyday makeup. You know, you have to remember that it's like you are getting photographed, and light's going to be hitting you differently, and it's your face is going to look different in like a still photo versus you having a conversation with someone. Cosplay definitely taught me how to do makeup for both everyday and for obviously for cosplay as well. It's one of those other skills that like you picked up, because like 13-year-old me was. I was the girl in school who, like, I wore large t-shirts and jeans and all these other, like, pretty preppy girls who were, like, already, like, fashion queens at 14. Like, I didn't know what I was doing. I just, like, that was never me. But then cosplay sort of necessitated that. And which is good, though, because now I know, like, how to do makeup for myself that makes me feel good without having to go crazy. Sometimes all you need is, like, just a little bit of eyeliner to pick up your day, and, like, I can be okay with that. But then you also know, like, you have your 20-step, 30-step routine for getting into cosplay. Like, all right, time to set aside that hour now for my makeup, and on top of the hour I needed to get into this costume, and you're like, oh, God.
Yeah, absolutely. Because definitely, like you're saying, like, cosplay as being just jack of all trades and, like, master of nones, but just, like, has taught me so much. You know, I never would have imagined, if you talk to, like, I don't know, pre-cosplay Joe is like, you're gonna learn put on makeup, he'd be like, what? And not even like to be like, yeah, you're gonna not be masculine. It was just kind of like, I never envisioned it as like being part of like my routine, and now I'm just like, no baby, I be doing the most, and people come for me for product recommendations, and it's wild. Like, I've built that up for me. And then the other like added skills, which is like, oh, like knowing how to pose and like how you kind of like carry yourself, whether it's like in front of the camera, and knowing your angles is like carried me, like not just like modeling in front of the camera, but like even like the way I sit sometimes, if I'm like in a conversation, I'll notice myself like, why am I sitting so up? Why are my shoulders at 3/4 to this person's angle? Just to be like perceived nicely if I'm like in person with somebody.
It's so true, though. Like, I've had normal, like, I say normal friends, like people who don't cosplay, who don't get their photograph taken as often, are always like, Amanda, why do you look so, like, nice in all your photos? And I'm just like, because I've had to look nice in photos for, like, half my life. You learn what your angles are, and you're kind of more aware of, like, how you position yourself. And it's not like I have to, like, oh, it's someone that I'm not. I have to present myself so nice all the time. It's more just, like, I'm more aware of, like, where I'm looking, where I'm sitting, how I'm sitting, you know, how I present myself, and, like, the way I feel about myself to feel good too.
Oh, fully. I vividly remember. So I don't even know how many years I was cosplaying before this, but I was doing photo shoots before, and then my sister decided, like, I'm gonna have my wedding, and I'm just like, oh my God, Carmen, sick, you found a man to marry, good for you. And she's like, yeah, but I also, like, we were doing like random photos, like the photographer was taking some candid photos, and she's like, I want like a family photo of like me and my husband and like my actual family, like her immediate family, not with her in-laws. And I was like, I don't know if I should be in this photo. She's like, what are you fucking talking about? You're my brother. Like, and I was like, so this can go two ways. I'm either going to hilariously outshine everybody in the photo by pure accident, or it's a candid photo and everybody looks like everybody's on the same page. She's like, stop that. It can't be that bad. Amanda. When I tell you it didn't even look like I was part of the photo.
Oh my god.
I am telling
you. Like they photoshopped you in from like a magazine like spread, right?
Mama, it was. I was just like, I was like, whatever about it. And I remember the photographer talking to my sister. She's like, who the fuck is your brother? And I was like, she was like, what are you talking about? She's like, so remember that family photo we took? She's like, yeah. Like, well, your brother knows how to pose. He is out here three-quarter posing, ducking his face, showing the cheekbone. It's like, and the rest of you motherfuckers are just laughing. And I was just like, ah, Joe. I will show you this photo somewhere.
Yeah, no problem. I immediately think of the, you know, I'm not a model. I just rolled over and woke up this way. And you're just like, you're just rolling into the photo, like, looking like $1 million. And you're just like, I told you, I warned you. I said this was going to happen.
Full fucking nightmare. I was like, Miss Carmen Salem, that's the last thing you want is your own brother showing you up at your wedding photo shoot. I was like, you paid the money for this, man. I didn't. I just showed up.
Oopsie.
I fucking love that. But that is just like one of the many things that like fully carries on, where it's just like my knowledge isn't just strictly about how to manipulate a plastic fiber hat, aka a wig or like some fabric. Yeah. Like there's so much that does transfer just casually, like through your own life.
Yeah, cosplay taught me, like, I didn't know like what styles of clothes looked good on me before. I didn't know like where my cutoff proportions were. Like, you know, add a belt here to make your legs look longer, or, you know, put an accessory here, use a short vest, not a long vest. Like, and I took those things that I learned from cosplay, from having to manipulate proportions on a costume to make sure that they fit my normal person body and not a lanky 9.5 heads tall, like anime proportion where girls have those legs for days. You know, you have to translate that stuff to look good on you. And then that taught me how to purchase things for myself in real life that would accentuate what's nice about my body, and how to like hide the stuff that maybe like you don't care about so much. And it really is like, it's a skill that translates over. And I feel like if you took me from even like in my early 20s to like the way that I dress now, it's night and day.
Oh. Holy, like, and that's like funny that you bring that up, because I didn't even think about that aspect of like how, like, not just how I carry myself, but how I do dress myself. Because I feel like it started as a joke at some point where it's like, Joe, you're like, all your cosplays show cleavage. And I'm like, haha, that's funny. And now I'm like, fast forward to like now, at any chance I get in my regular wardrobe, I am like, we could lose a button. And I look like some man from Miami half the time, like just like walking down a con hallway. And I'm like, who am I thinking? Me strutting down the Gaylord, and it is fully 30 degrees outside. And I'm like, but in this atrium, baby, it feels like it's 60, and that cleavage is going to be shot.
Okay, but it's funny that you mentioned that, because when I told my partner that I was going to be on this podcast, and I was like, Joe, I'm like, you know Joe. And he was like, I don't remember. And I pulled up the photo from this past MAGFest where I'm just like planted right on you in your cleavage. And I was like, this is Joe. And he's like, oh, okay, yeah, I remember Joe now. I'm like, Joe!
And it's fully like my trademark now. I was like, so the titties are coming out tonight. And I was like, I guess, yeah, that's all just
okay, but
that.
Like, you gotta show the girls off when they're looking their best, so.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so it's like literally like I feel like it was like once I cosplayed like Niles or Zero from like Fire Emblem Fates, it was like game over for me. I was like, this look works for me. And so it is like by trying on like these crazy fictitious outfits that we've created ourselves and brought them into reality that we found out it's like, this really does look good on me. Like, I wouldn't have known, for example, like certain color combinations worked well with my skin tone, because I was like, especially like fucking New York, where it's like, I'm like, everything is neutrals. I'm like, all I'm wearing is blacks, whites. That's it. There's no color. And now, like, because like I've tried so many other things where it's like, you know, a navy is good. It's a nice departure from your blacks. But Joe, you can wear red and greens pretty solidly. I was like, whoa, would have never guessed that if it wasn't for cosplay.
You do end up having, like, this rainbow variety throughout cosplay of, like, you sort of know, like, what shade. And then, like, again, like, what shades in particular look good on you. Because, like, you could say red, but, like, are we talking about, like, a maroon, like, a deep red? Are we talking about, like, a bright red? Are we talking about, like, a desaturated red? You know, there's so much within that, too.
Oh, yeah. I need a nice dark maroon red. Like, that slaps on my yes. skin.
Yo, I feel like dark maroon is a pretty, like, works on everyone thing. Like, I don't know. I haven't really seen someone not look good when you slap them in some sort of, like, dark tone like that.
Oh, fully. I once, like, bought, like, a, I forgot what I bought, like, a highlighter red. It feels like it's highlighter red. It's just red. Like, it's just textbook definition red, almost like a neon red. And I was, like, I wore it, and I was, like, I could wear this, but also, this is a lot. Like, this is just very loud. But
this is radioactive.
I was, like, what did I think when I bought this? This is insane. But yeah, I was like, I have also, like, outside of just, like, learning to, like, dress yourself and learning what colors, I was, like, learning the ways to cheat so many things in life with the cosplay. I was like, let me tell you, when I figured out about, like, insoles, and not just, like, Dr. Scholl's, like, insoles, we're talking the height given ones, I was like, so I could be 6'3 and be uncomfortable down there, but I will be tall for everybody.
I haven't manipulated my height as much for cosplay. I feel like I've just done the fake titties a lot because I, like, cosplaying One Piece, I'm just like, no one's proportioned like that, or, like, not really many people. And it's just, like, cutlets, 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 bras, cutlets, cutlets, and then, like, the contouring in the chest. And it's like, ah, look at them now. And it's just like, gotcha, I'm flat as shit. I feel like I showed coworkers one time, like, a photo, I think it was of, like, my Space Dandy boobies waitress outfit. Because,
yes.
Like, they are all out there, and they're just like, Amanda, I didn't, and then they were, like, were polite, it was, like, in a very, like, casual, like, chill way, and I was just like, oh no, those are fake as hell, and they're just like, what? And I'm like, yo, those are mad cutlets in there, and then a ton of makeup in between. I'm like, that's fake. That's what's fun about cosplay, is, like, you could fake that, and they're like, wow, what? And I'm like, gotcha.
Yes, that is my absolute, like, that's like the fun part where I was so used to doing contour on my face. I was like, no, shut up. You can contour your whole body if you want to.
Yep.
And I remember the first time I, like, contoured my collarbones, and they were like, my friend was like, Joe, you are psychotic. And I was like, shut up. I was like, just me with my brush just going into the pockets of my bones. They're like, you are insane. I was like, watch the photos later. Come back to me and say I'm psychotic. And they were like, okay, maybe you did kind of slap. Maybe that was right. And I'm stealing that for next time. I was like, you're welcome.
Again, like, I keep saying that's what's fun about cosplay. That's what's fun about cosplay. But, like, there are so many fun aspects about cosplay. And that is one of them, is just, like, getting to sort of manipulate, you know, what you feel comfortable with, too, to kind of capture these different characters. And, you know, I guess, like, for Space Dandy especially, it's, like, obviously it's, like, a Hooters reference. So, like, the whole focus is, like, the rack and the butt. And I'm like, well, I got the butt. I just am missing the rack. So I just got to work on that. But it was so much fun. And then, again, you walk out there, and you're just like, yeah, I look hot as hell. This is great. But then also, like, when you get to take it all off at the end and you're like, oh, I'm comfortable me body again.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I always feel it's, like, fun to talk about this aspect of cosplay, just because, I mean, back in the day, which we talked about in the podcast right before this, is that, like, cosplay, I felt, like, got such a bad rap. Not necessarily, like, horrendously bad, but, like, you mentioned, like, I'm a cosplayer, and they're like, you do what? And nowadays, it is just so commonplace.
It's such a different conversation now than it was back then. I mean, back then we were still also dealing with, like, you know, you had Amfigury for, like, your one wig resource, and
God, yes.
And you had, you know, you were buying clothes in a store as, like, your main resource of, like, what do I find that looks like this costume? And, like, that's not to say that, like, I still don't do that now if there's something I can just walk into a store and get, but, like, there's so much more available, and the dialogue is more open, and there's more of a focus on cosplayers too. Like, there it's just more in the mainstream, which is nice though, because like you don't have to feel so much like a weirdo now or like an outsider when you say like, yeah, this is my hobby, like I get dressed up and I make costumes. Because now I say that and the first thing out of most people's mouths are like, oh, so you go to Comic-Con, like they're aware of like that sort of association, and it makes it easier to have that dialogue and not have to then give them like a 20 minute primer, like, you know, dialogue about what is cosplay. They know what cosplay is already. I don't have to explain that to them. I can just talk to them about our experiences and like whatever conversation we're having without that preface to it.
Fully. Because it's like, yeah, like you mentioned, it is all the focus is like, oh, you go to Comic Cons, like, haha, no, we go to anime conventions. They're different. But like on top of that as well, it's just like back in the day, I was like looked at as such like this wild subculture that like nobody really understood. And then like you're saying, because of it being so proliferated, not just like, for example, like people just knowing about it, making jokes about it on sitcoms, but like also like the news started covering it, and I still don't know why to this day. They were just like, look, Comic-Con's in town. I'm like, okay, sick. That's my people. But we finally like got the less stigmatized, like, oh wait, these people do have jobs. Like these people do have skills and doing great things. And
what,
it's like,
what a concept. It's like, yes, I go to work to pay for these things, like I pay my bills, I pay my taxes, and then what money I have left I send off to like wigs and fabric, and I spend my time making these weird character costumes. Like, yeah, we're just normal people. Like this is our hobby. It's this, you know, it's the same thing as people who spend money on season passes for sports games and who tailgate and they travel around to all these things. Like, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's just different strokes for different folks. This is just what fills me with joy.
Because you won't catch me tailgating at no football game. Like, that is not for me.
No, you know, I've been to a couple of different, I'm not a sports person. I am not a sports person. But I have been to a couple different types of sports events. Football was very boring for me, aside from just drinking with coworkers. Hockey was actually a lot of fun. I got really into like seeing hockey live. That was way more exciting. But I'm still just like, I'll pass. I'm fine. I'm good. Thanks.
But yeah, it's fully like different shows for different folks. And it's like, I always find it funny that especially like nowadays, what I like to coin as like the old lady hobbies are having a resurgence. So it's like sewing is having a resurgence, and like knitting all of a sudden like came back full force, and everybody's like, we're knitting now. I was like, where were you guys?
Knitting, and like everyone's getting really into like needle pointing again. I feel like I see everyone doing like their little like cross stitching projects these days, which is really fun because again, you could make that nerdy too, because everyone's doing their like anime and like video game inspired, like, here's my Studio Ghibli cross stitch, and it's really wholesome.
I know, and I love it so much, because I was like, it's this like return to like tactile hobbies where it's not like everything is like in a digital space, so everybody gets to be like, oh, this is what it's like to like kind of like have something that you made yourself just completed, and that self, like that sense of accomplishment. And I can be like, you get that? You see that? You made that knitted blanket? Baby, now me making the costume, same thing, just magnified, you know?
Yes, I feel like I've tried to explain that to people, that it's like, again, one of the aspects for me with cosplay is just knowing that like I physically put this together. I built this from nothing, from, you know, flat sheets of fabric and pieces of model magic and whatever, and like I did this. I made this costume that is now a 3D shape that fits around me, and these props and, you know, these crowns and these swords and all this stuff. Like I you did that, and you have that to show. You're like, you're proud of it.
Yeah, because I was like, I remember when I first got into cosplay, I was like, I was terrified, because I was literally like, how does a flat fabric become clothes on me? And then once you get into it, like, you kind of like understand, it's like, you can have two squares and it'll work against your body and it's fine. But then I also realized that my first few fears with the cosplay is like what everybody else who doesn't like participate, I guess, like more largely into sewing, they're just like, this looks intimidating. But it's like, it's not until like you start getting used to it. But everybody else will always be impressed, like, you made that? It's like, yes, that's me, I did that. Like, that is sick, good for you, man. Like, I could never do that. It's like, yes, you can, let's go, buddy.
Yeah, I again, because I'm self-taught, because yeah, I learned how to do everything myself. That's why I'm like, no, everyone has the capacity to do this. Like, you don't have to be exceptionally talented at it. Although, of course, there are always going to be people who things just come more naturally to them and they're, you know, it's just inherent or whatever. But, like, you can do it. You have to just start small. I think what intimidates a lot of people is they see cosplayers with these, like, crazy builds and these very complicated costumes. And they're like, well, how do I do that? And I'm like, you don't do that immediately. That's a couple levels away. You start off with your basic, like, make a school uniform or make, like, just, like, a t-shirt. Like, even if you're just sewing for yourself, like, make a pillow, make a little stuffed, like, doll that's just, like, a round blob. Just so you start learning, like, how fabric moves and how it works and, like, how comfortable you are at the machine, too. And then you can work your way up to that. I mean, there were so many things I wanted to cosplay when I first started cosplaying that I knew I couldn't make either because the technology wasn't there or I wasn't physically ready for it yet, that I did eventually end up doing down the line because I was like, all right, I'm ready to approach this. Like, I knew I couldn't do Perona off the bat till, like, way later on. But when I did, I nailed it. I know I nailed it too because, like, I worked really hard to get to that point. Even, like, my Digimon costume, like my Davis jacket with the flames on it, I knew I couldn't do that when I first started. It wasn't until I learned about leather paints and, like, how all that stuff worked, and I learned about, like, fur a little bit more too for the collar, that then when I did it, I'm like, I'm ready for this. I'm ready to approach this. Like, I've unlocked that level cap, and I did it. And again, I'm proud of it because I know I nailed it. It's good to throw yourself sometimes into a difficult project, but you also have to know your limitations too and not throw yourself into something that you're just going to then be upset because it didn't come out at all like the way you wanted it to come out.
Oh, fully. And I mean, like, a good way to, like, slowly ease into it. Like, I always fully recommend people is, like, because some people are like, how do you make patterns? It's like, stop, just buy the patterns. And then, like, eventually you will learn how, like, shapes work for you. And learn how to alter a pattern, and then from then on out you can get into pattern making. But everybody always feels like it's one of the things I have to do. It's like, no, wait for Joann's $1.99 sale, stock up, go to town, and then have a whole repertoire and just learn how to just slightly alter a garment, whether you want to add a dart here or you want to just cut out a whole panel to make a patchwork jacket of that same garment, so you understand how things move and you're very familiar with your machine.
Yeah, I mean, when I say, again, like, I started sewing by hand and teaching myself, I think the first couple of costumes I made, I bought, like, thrift store stuff that was, like, the right shape that I needed somewhat for a costume, and I just cut up, so, like, I cut up pre-existing garments to see how those shapes worked and how those patterns work, and then I made my patterns based off of that. That's how I taught myself how things work. I still do that sometimes where I'm just like, well, I have this blazer that I have cut up into pieces that I keep in my closet that I pull out whenever I need a blazer pattern because I know that that's the one that works, and it does me no wrong, you know, every time. You just have to, even if you start that way, it's just you can't overwhelm yourself, and you have the capacity to do all these things, but you have to build that. You have to build that muscle memory and the skill and the knowledge base.
Oh, holy. And, like, literally, I am no stranger to still using that trick where it's like you take masking tape and you put it over your favorite garment. Yeah. And that's your own little pattern, and you add your seam allowances. And I still do that.
There's no right or wrong way to cosplay. You know, there's no, like, you have to do it this way or you have to do it that way. It's whatever way is going to make the costume that you're, it's not going to fall apart in you, though, to be honest, like, when you're out on the con floor. And that, like, it's something you're proud of. You're like, I did this. I'm this character now. This came out the way that I'm happy with. Doesn't matter if you made the pattern from a scratch or you bought a pattern or whatever. It's just like, You just get there. You just get there and you learn.
Exactly. And, like, always, at the end of the day, cosplay is for yourself more than anything
else.
And I always tell people, I'm like, shut up. Are you enjoying this? Are you having fun right now? Sometimes they're like, no. It's like, well, baby, we gotta change something because I love acting Boo Boo the Fool. I, like, run around, do the most. It's like, if you want to make it, if you want to buy it, there's no shame in it. At the end of the day, it straight up is a hobby where we pretend to be fictional characters. Like,
right. If you're not having fun, like, why are you doing it? You know, I love to cosplay for fun. You know, that's why I'll do, like, I'll have like my serious costumes where I like plan my photo shoots and I take it very seriously. And then I have like my goblin costumes with Carrie where we cosplay from terrible Zelda like spin-off games and are just goblins on the con floor for like 2 hours. And like I have fun in different ways when I'm doing both of them. I'm having fun at my very serious photo shoot because I'm doing something that I care about and I'm like, I'm doing, this is my dream. This is my favorite character and I'm representing this character and these photos are going to look bomb. Or I'm like, I'm having a good time with my friend just being a, like a disaster like usual and I'm having all these memories that I'm building up, you know? There's, again, as long as you're having fun and you're not hurting other people, obviously. Like, there's no wrong way to cosplay.
Oh, fully. And that is honestly my favorite thing, even though it was just this year. The Legend of Zelda.
Yeah! I'm like, no, we're doing this. Me and Carrie had done like our very serious like Breath of the Wild cosplay at the last MAGFest we went to. We were like very presentable. Oh, serious Link and Zelda, so cute. And then we were like, okay, but then what if the next time we were just these goblins from this crappy CDI game? And that's what we did. But again, I was just like, I'm just like, oh, I'm so cute. Look at me and Zelda. And I'm just like, nyeh, around the entire con floor. And people just being like, are you cosplaying from the CDI games? And I'm just like, hell yeah, you bet we are. And it was, that's fun. That's so much fun too, is just being a goblin, but being a goblin from something that everyone knows is like cursed.
Oh, fully, that game is fucking wild. Every time I see the videos from it, I was like, you guys released this and said, let's go.
That was a wild time that no one likes to talk about because the Philips CDI was not a gaming console. It was a presentation like machine. It was a slideshow machine. And yet they were like, oh, we need to break into the video game market. It's just like, no, you really don't. This is a bad idea. Please stop.
Like, you could have fully sat down. Nobody needed this. Nobody literally asked for it.
Right. But now it's so much a part of like memeing culture and like gaming, you know, jokes in history that it's like, all right, but like, but what if those didn't exist? Like, that'd be a shame too, almost in its own way.
I know. I was like, but thank God they're still here and the jokes will probably be made for honestly years to come.
Forever. I mean, I just the other day I saw someone edited Hades from Hades over
stop.
The King of Hyrule. Over the king. Yeah. So it's just like, yep, that's great. This is phenomenal. Thank you for your service.
It's like, still track, still relevant, still glad to see it no matter what.
To this day, yeah.
I love that. But, oh, Amanda, we are slowly running out of time. The hours truly always fly. But honestly, one, thank you so much for coming on this podcast and truly, like, lending your journey with us. And honestly, always so glad to hear that it's like not just for me, because I always feel like this podcast is like my therapy at this point, but it's also making sure that I'm not going crazy through my experience and that we're all having the same thing where it's like cosplay is fun. And then, but also cosplay gives us so many relevant skills in our day-to-day life more than anything else. And it's just like, it's wild to think about like when you get to sit down and be like, well, I can do this, 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 and that. What can y'all do? Like,
yeah, I it definitely has helped me even in like a couple little tasks of like, you know, someone contacts me and is just like, oh, this thing broke, can you fix it for me? I'm like, yeah, I got you. Or like things around the house like go wrong, like I know how to use a handsaw and all these other like tools, and I'm just like, I don't need to call someone to fix this, like I got this, you know? So it really is like it's an everyday sort of skill set that you build up to.
I know, and I love that for us. But, oh, Amanda, while we're here, do you have anything you'd like to promote?
I mean, you can follow me on every single form of social media under Blue Circles, and that's with two U's. My Etsy shop is closed at the moment just because I wanted to get past this hump with USPS being, like, super duper behind on all their packages, and just didn't want any Karens coming after me being like, where is my face mask? Like, so I will be reopening that up probably in about a week or two. Also Blue Circles on Etsy, Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook, Instagram, like all that good stuff. Like, you know, it's been hard because there hasn't been cons like driving me to want to make costumes for, but I do want to sort of get back on that when I can, because I'm, again, I miss cosplaying, but it's hard when you don't have like something to kind of build for, you know?
Oh, fully. I was like, I'm not dressing up like a character for me in my bedroom by myself. I was like, that sounds crazy to me.
Right. Like, God bless TikTokers and all these people who are just like, they're like, they spend their time getting into it for like a 5-second video. I'm like, bless you. I can't do that though. Like, it's just not for me.
No, I have to be like where the people are. I was like, there's something about the extrovert in me that I'm just like, look, I am here. Let's talk. And I just like eye someone looking my way.
Again, it's that whole like walking onto the con floor experience of like you see the other people in their costumes and then you're in your costume and it's just like the electricity that you can feel in the air when you're at a con or when you're at a photo shoot even, you know, it's different and it's hard. It's like I haven't been able to find that like to replicate at home. But again, God bless those people. But I'm hoping there are, you know, maybe back half of this year, there will be things to get hype about to build costumes for again.
Girl, I hope so. I have a whole slew of Hades characters that gotta show up at some point.
Yo, tell me about it. Tell me about. I feel like the first con, no matter where it is, it's just gonna be this explosion of Hades cosplayers because I feel like that's the thing that like the floodgates are gonna open up because it's just been so insanely popular.
Honestly, it's just gonna be me reliving like my middle school fantasy of Greek mythology, but with everybody, with everybody.
It's gonna be so much fun when that happens too.
And I cannot wait. But guys, remember you can ask any questions for myself or my guests to answer on the podcast at curiouscat.me/playingdressup. If you love this podcast, you can like it, you can rate it, you can subscribe so you never ever miss an episode. You can even directly support this podcast on anchor.fm/playingdressup via a small monthly donation, but only if you can, because these times are rough and life is wild. But you can also give it the nice 5 stars on Apple Podcasts for free. And even if you don't like it, give it the nice 5 stars. Anyways, guys, we will see you next time. Goodbye.